This is News in No Time at Gordon. On today's roundtable, more trouble surrounding the Cheney shooting and trouble in paradise for some sheriff deputies. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our D.C. headquarters, Karen Narasaki, President and Executive Director of the Asian American Justice Center. John McWhorter joins us here in New York. He's Senior Fellow in Public Policy with the Manhattan Institute. And Bob Meadows is a writer for People magazine. We welcome you both. Let's talk a little bit about what we just heard, and that is the response from Republicans, essentially. This huge report, very scathing, Bob Meadows, from Republicans. And we should note that Democrats didn't want to involve themselves in this study because they believed that Republicans would not be forthright in their investigation. But they were very hard-hitting. One has to believe to some degree it's an election year that played into this.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. The Republicans, they don't want to come out looking soft on this. This was obviously, Katrina, a big issue that continues to resonate with the American people. Those images of people being stuck at the convention center are still strong in people's minds. So, yeah, this attack was blistering, and I think it was surprising for a lot of people, except in the context of an election year. And they blamed everybody for this fall. They blamed Bush, they blamed the governor, they blamed the mayor, they blamed FEMA. Everybody took a hit on this, and I think that's actually probably what people wanted to hear.
Interestingly enough, John, one of the groups that did not get blamed in this report, surprise, surprise, was Congress. You heard me ask William Jefferson whether or not oversight should have been better prior to the catastrophe. We've heard many people yell about the problem that was coming. It came. Congress did little to nothing prior to.
Yeah, it's clear that this is a nation that isn't good at preparing for things like this, and it does make you worry about what sort of preparations we have for terrorist threats. However, what's interesting to me is that any of this is considered a surprise. Like, talk about the FEMA part of it. It's as if 13 years ago was sometime during the Coolidge administration. In 1992, Hurricane Andrew happened, and all of this same stuff with bloated national bureaucracies meant that people of Homestead, Florida, who were mostly white as butter, for the record, had these same problems, the same five-day wait, the same media scandal, I think only because the internet wasn't around, and so you can't link to too many files of it. Are any of us surprised now that this sort of thing happened? We've got a chronic problem, and it would be nice to look at even these previous occasions to see that what we're dealing with is structural and permanent unless we really wake up.
Karen, here's the interesting point to me. It's almost as though we took a peek behind the curtain and saw that the wizard wasn't as big as we thought he was when looking at the government. There is also an audit that shows that millions and millions of dollars have been wasted by the government, squandered in terms of preparing the evacuees to get back on their feet. That juxtaposed with this report does not speak well to, as John suggested, being able to deal with catastrophes of this side from the federal government.
Well, I think it shows what happens when the hiring of leadership is based totally on friendship and political donations and not on whether you have the professional qualification experience to actually do your job. And that's clearly what happened here. I do want to say, you know, for the Republicans, to give them the benefit of the doubt, I don't think it's just that it's an election year. I also think that this is a region where there are Republican members of Congress. The governor of Mississippi is Republican, where their own constituencies and themselves felt the brunt of this. So I think there is some personal interest in this that goes beyond the election. The other thing I want to note is I was just down in Houston with the chairs of the Congressional Black, Asian, and Latino caucuses doing a town hall meeting. And What frightens me about these stories about fraud is there's still thousands of people who haven't yet registered for help, or people who are being denied help from both FEMA and SBA who clearly do deserve help. They're having trouble getting through their bureaucracy. And I'm worried that these kinds of stories are going to make people think we're done. And clearly we're not. There are just so many victims who need help and aren't getting it.
You know, one thing I want to add is that there is a statistic making its way around that 900,000 people who applied for aid gave false addresses or false Social Security numbers. And I'm really dismayed to see that that many people were pulling that kind of trick. I'd like to see exactly what was going on, because frankly, I doubt it. It couldn't be that that many people
that
were pulling
that
kind of
chicanery. That was actually
more than
one-third of the applicants, which is an astonishing figure.
What? They must be giving this wrong data for a reason or something. I hate to to think that there was that much of that going on.
I do want to give FEMA a slight benefit of the doubt, just a slight benefit, because we do have to remember that at the time that this was going on, unless, of course, it's still going on right now, there was this huge rush. This was a frenetic rush to get these people from New Orleans into places that are safe. You know, you talk about the $399 rooms in Chicago. A little bit of research into that, that was actually two families, and it included meals. So it wasn't really quite as bad as the number seen necessarily.
Well, but then it's almost like the Defense Department and that $9,000 hammer or whatever it was with the toilet seat. You know, there is a sense of whether that be the case or paying $375 a day for a beachfront condo to put folks in. There was the fiasco of the debit card that was given out. Much of this was response to the idea that a lot of heat was being taken, and rather than somebody taking a step back and a breath and saying, let's get a hold of this, they just started, as we heard from Christopher Shays, admitting that even the Congress just started appropriating money because the heat from the public was white hot at the time, Karen.
Well, I don't think Congress was running around appropriating money. They haven't appropriated enough money. They haven't come close to the amount of money that's going to be necessary. Houston had to open two additional high schools. And has had no help from the federal government or anybody else to deal with the new numbers of people that they have in their community, the new numbers of elderly, the people with disability, the thousands who need mental health counseling who aren't getting it, the small business owners who are suffering. The bureaucracy for that is ridiculous. I'm really surprised at the high number that's purported in terms of bad addresses, because the reports we kept getting were it was impossible to get online and to register. There were thousands of people who ended up in church basements and homes who, you know, these reports don't reflect really the fullness of what's really going on.
Well, the interesting point here, and I promise this because I've lived in Washington for years and know there will be another shoe to drop. Someone will fall for this, whether it's Michael Chertoff. But someone will be the fall guy for much of this, and the White House is making sure that it's not going to be the president. let's turn our attention to the White House and Dick Cheney. So many people talking about the hunting accident, and unfortunately, the gentleman that Mr. Cheney was hunting with now has suffered a heart attack. It just seems to exacerbate the ire of many that this White House wasn't as forthcoming as many suggest that they should be. We also saw it in the press corps yesterday, NBC's David Gregory taking to task the White House. Let's take a quick listen here.
Well, hold on one second. I've got one last question.
Other people in this room have questions.
I understand that, but I'm not getting answers here, Scott. And I'm trying to be forthright with you, but don't tell me that you're giving us complete answers when you're not actually answering the question, because everybody knows what is an answer and what is not an answer.
And the final, David, now you want to make this about you, and it's not about you.
All right, that's
you,
David about Gregory from NBC, Scott McClellan, White House spokesperson. John, and those of us, again, who know Washington know that you rarely get answers. So to see David stand up and other reporters really at a point of feeling like I'm going to kick back a lot more than they normally do. Is this much to do about nothing, in your opinion? Some people feel as though it was a hunting accident. They were friends or acquaintances and were making far more out of this than we should. Others suggest, look, it's the vice president. You need to be forthright and forthcoming.
Ed, I frankly think that it is absolutely puerile, the kind of attention that's being paid to what is a private issue. I think the reason we're giving it so much attention is because Dick Cheney is a man who a lot of people love to hate. And, of course, he makes it worse by being so private. But he was out hunting and he accidentally shot someone. In the meantime, the homicide rate is up in various cities, particularly among young black men. Milwaukee young teens are going in gangs and killing adults, and this is becoming a copycat effect in Milwaukee. We have people who have not been given housing because of Katrina. There's serious issues, and we're dealing with Dick Cheney in an Elmer Fudd costume. It's just we're just picking on somebody like we're in a classroom in
fifth
grade.
While all that's true, Bob, much of this would have been diffused had the White House just come out with a statement to say this happened at this time, this happened, this, and not allowed the ranch owner to take the onus and the impetus to getting it out to the press.
That would have stopped some of it, Ed, but it wouldn't have stopped Leno. It wouldn't have stopped Letterman.
Of course not.
This is the type of issue that even if Cheney had come out, I believe one of the gentlemen said, no matter what he does, he's going to look ridiculous. He's just going to do his own thing. So Cheney did need to come out. He needs to take some responsibility for this. Which I guess he has. He's admitted that he shot the guy. But it's still, this is still going to be the type of issue that we would be talking about, because it's not a funny thing, but it can be made into something that's funny, especially because the guy is still
I hold Cheney accountable for telling us about Iraq, not about him shooting somebody in the body while he was off on a weekend.
But, Karen, it just seems to me, particularly during this second term, that here is a White House that continues to stumble, at least from a PR sense. Forget whether or not you agree with its policies or not, particularly that juxtaposed to their first couple of years where they seem so much in control in everything they did.
Yeah, well, it has become the gang who couldn't shoot straight. And I think part of the challenge here is it does happen in a context where there is concern that there's been cover-up after cover-up after cover-up of things that sometimes you don't even need to cover up. There's so much control and secrecy in this administration. And this is just, you know, this is just an outward manifestation of it. And I think that's why it resonates so much. It's not just the fact that it's Cheney, but it's in the context of an administration who's been less than totally forthright.
All right, let me take you to a private matter, John McWhorter, when you talk about it was private for this vice president. There's a county in Florida where the sheriff's department is now saying, members of that sheriff's department, if in fact you commit adultery, you will, in fact, lose your job. So much so was the adultery rate amongst the employees and the sheriffs there. It had gotten so out of control that they had to step in. Is it fair, even though you can question it morally, whether a police officer certainly should be held to a higher standard, et cetera, is it fair in what you're doing in your private life to possibly cost you your job in this case?
Well, in this case, it's a rather specific ruling. I mean, if it's going to be about paramours.
Still private.
Very private, but the problem is that it affects the public performance of the job. And so if people having affairs will affect the quality of police work, then I can see there being some rule against it, which you assume will be broken off. And making it about adultery suggests that this is somebody with particular beliefs and he's enjoying the opportunity to impose them. But yeah, when it's a matter of private affairs having an effect on the public, Dick Cheney's hunting habits don't affect me, my pocketbook, or anything.
All right, well, let's take it a step further, Karen, and use John's analogy of whether or not it affects the public. If I'm one of those sheriffs who's having dalliances on the side, as long as I show you that, hey, I'm not doing it on company time, and my beeper, pager, and gun is beside me on that nightstand every time I'm with this person, I can get out to an emergency call. Shouldn't I be allowed to do this?
Well, I just kept thinking that as an employer, I really don't want to know the sex lives of my employees. So I'm really surprised that that the sheriff is choosing to delve into this. I do think that it is a little odd that, because the next step might be, well, we're not going to allow you to start dating, or if you have a bad relationship, we're going to start penalizing you for that. I mean, the reality is people are people. They have lives. Some of the things that happen in their lives do affect their jobs, but I don't think you can really legislate for that.
Police officers who are boinking each other may pay more attention to each other in dangerous situations than to others or even to the public. That's the problem.
Well, but here's the interesting point, Bob. It goes beyond just whether or not I'm having an adulterous affair with a coworker. It's whether or not I'm having an adulterous affair with anyone.
Right. As long as you work for somebody else, you have to do what they tell you to do. There is a company in Michigan where the guy said, you can't smoke away from the job. And that's been upheld many times. And so if these officers have to obey this, you know, the NBA players are not wearing hoodies anymore on the bench. They're wearing suits. They have to, these officers are going to have to pay attention to this. I think it's a nice thing that this sheriff has passed this. We'll see whether or not, it's actually getting followed.
Is this, in your opinion, John, just a more specific to what many of us, particularly those of us in the media, have in our contracts, and that's what they call an ethics clause, anything that they feel the company, and they usually leave it that open-ended so they can pretty much nail you on anything that you do, no pun intended. But talk to me about that.
Yes, obviously it is that. There's a place for ethics clauses in that it tamps down a certain amount of things. Sometimes when something is censored, that keeps it from completely taking over with the assumption that it's going to happen. But in this case, the idea that we're doing something about something that might happen outside, it's very specific. It overreaches, not to mention that it's unenforceable. It's not going to do anything. It seems like a kind of symbolism.
So, Bob, what of the idea in the juxtaposition of this and Dick Cheney? Does the fact that he is, in your mind, the vice president, take it outside of the realm of it's a private matter?
That's just the society that we live in. He's a public person. Whatever he does is going to be just magnified that much more. And let's face it, Dick Cheney shot somebody. That is news. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's news. So, yeah, absolutely. It takes it very far outside.
Karen, any problems in terms of the suggestion that Bob made of not being able to smoke on or off the job, an employer suggesting that, the NBA dress code, the ban on adultery here, that we're starting to cross a line that perhaps will infringe on so many private areas that we need to take a look?
Well, I think it's a challenge because employees can vote with their feet. So if they don't like the employer, I mean, generally, if they don't like the rules of the employer, they have a place to go. But I do think that some of these rules are beginning to get a little silly in terms of your ability to really enforce what's going on in people's private lives. And then what will happen is it will be enforced unfairly and unequally and probably used in situations where there's really some other issue, but you use this rule as a way of addressing it rather than getting at the real issue.
All right. Well, the moral here is keep your gun in the closet and, you know, don't have an adulterous affair. And that way you won't have to smoke after and you'll be safe.
There it is.
Keep your paychecks going. All right. Karen Narasaki in Washington, D.C., president and executive director of the Asian American Justice Center. Thank you so much for joining us. And John McWhorter of the Manhattan Institute and Bob Meadows of People Magazine. I thank you all for joining us. Greatly appreciate it.